A couple weeks ago, I went running with my dog in the Cochrane Shoals section of the Chattahoochee National River Recreation Area, whatever they call it. And where that is, it's down Johnston Ferry Road, and then before you cross the river, you make a right, that's Collins Drive, and you take that to the end. There's a trail there, but then you can go off into the woods, and that's where I run, in the woods. So a couple weeks ago, I'm running in the woods with my dog, and I like to run in the morning. And to get there in the morning without fighting traffic, you have to leave early. So I leave by 6:30 in the morning, and I'm there by 6:45. Now, this time of year, at 6:45 in the morning, it is dark outside. It is dark. And actually, last month, it was dark till 7:45. So I run with a headlamp when it's this dark. I have a nice headlamp that I use to run on these trails with. And my dog is off leash. He runs right behind me. And sometimes he squirts off to the right or the left, chasing a squirrel or a critter or some sort like that, but he never catches anything. He comes right back and runs behind me. So I'm running out there in the dark with my headlamp, and I notice that he's not behind me, and I don't hear him. So I stop, and I look into the woods for him, and then I see him. Actually, I don't really see him. I see the reflection of the light from my headlamp in his eyes. That's all I see is his eyes. He's about 50 feet away in the brush in the darkness. I'm like, hey, come on, let's go. And when I say that, he starts padding. I hear him rustling through the leaves, and within 5 seconds, he's right by my side. But off in the darkness, 50 feet away in the brush, that pair of eyes is still looking at me. Yeah. It could have been a Blair Witch Project, Silence of the Lambs moment. But actually, I surprised myself. I didn't even think anything of it. I just kept going. Just kept running. Now, 3 years ago, that's when I first started running in those woods, was 3 years ago. If I would have had that moment, it probably would have freaked me out. But you know, having done this for 3 years, the woods and the darkness have a kind of a comforting feel to them, to me now. The woods have a feel to them. Can the woods have a feel to them? Or actually, more importantly, are the woods a sentient entity in and of itself? Have you ever considered that? A sentient being, the woods. Have we considered other entities as being sentient? We think of us and perhaps animals. What about trees? What about the grass that Bruce was talking about? Are they sentient beings? What about bacteria, germs, viruses? We might think that we've evolved, we evolved to sneeze to get rid of germs and bacteria, right? We sneeze to get rid of germs, bacteria, viruses. That's what we do. It helps protect us, and we've evolved in that way. But have we ever thought about it from the other perspective, from the germs perspective? What does a germ want? It wants a nice, cozy place, a nice home. It wants a nice home. It wants food. It wants to reproduce, and when it reproduces, you know, it gets crowded. That's what we do. It spread. We spread. We've evolved almost unbelievably as a species. We can live anywhere on this planet, hot, cold, on the water. We've done a good job of that. We're in space now. There's 6 people in space. How do I know? Because I Googled how many people are in space right now? And it took me to a... And there's a website called How Many People Are in Space Right Now? And when you go to it, it shows a picture, nice, beautiful picture of Earth taken from orbit, and then a big number, 6. 6 people in space right now. So we've done a good job at evolving to spread and live throughout the world. And germs and bacteria might say, you know what? We could hop on this. We could hop on this delivery system. Actually, sneezing, we may have been co-opted by bacteria and germs into sneezing so that we can spread bacteria and germs everywhere. There's six people in space spreading germs and bacteria amongst themselves. Sounds strange, doesn't it? Author and herbalist Stephen Herod Buhner writes, "Unfortunately, medical researchers' beliefs about bacteria are very wrong. Researchers said it would take roughly 1 million years for bacteria to develop widespread resistance to antibiotics through spontaneous mutation. They assumed bacteria were stupid, when in reality, bacteria are highly sentient. They communicate by means of a sophisticated language, as sophisticated as ours. They recognize their kin. They protect their offspring. They create chemicals designed to produce specific outcomes in living systems, which certainly fits any definition of tool making." Interesting. Interesting. Here's the point I'm trying to make. Who's really in charge here? Who's really in charge here? Often we hear that we humans can save the earth, but again, who's really in charge? Who knows? Maybe nature is trying to save us. Maybe with its storms, wildfires, hurricanes that are occurring with greater frequency, maybe nature is trying to tell us something. Maybe these storms and wildfires and hurricanes are tough love, a bitter prescription, a pill that we have to swallow in order not to become extinct ourselves as a species. You've likely heard it said that nature has a mind of her own, but have you ever considered it to be literally true? That nature might have a mind of her own? Might nature have some nature and all that is comprised in nature have consciousness? So before you file that away in the crackpot category, I will tell you that philosophers throughout the ages have discussed questions like, what is consciousness? What is thought? What is the mind? How do we know what we know? And when you look at some of the answers, you don't have to dig too far to find out that we're on a pretty slippery slope as to what those answers might be. Panpsychism is the idea that everything material, regardless of how small, has an element of consciousness. It's not the same consciousness we have. It's probably better. they're probably more conscious. No, it's not the same consciousness that we have. There's a spectrum, a continuum of consciousness that maybe all things might have. Again, crackpot idea. Was Plato a crackpot? In the Timaeus, he says that individual stars are living creatures, quote, living creatures, and that the creator of the universe divided it into souls in equal number, and to each star he assigned a soul. That's Plato. In the 20th century, philosopher Josiah Royce, who taught for 30 years at Harvard, says, we have no sort of right to speak in any way as if the inner experience behind any fact of nature were of a grade lower than ours, or less conscious, or less rational. This reality is, like that of our own experience, conscious, organic, full of clear contrast, rational, definite. We ought not to speak of dead nature. Josiah Royce. Now, my point here is not to convince you that panpsychism is true. My point here is that the idea is really not as far-fetched as you might think. In her early 20s, journalist Claire Thompson did something entirely out of character for her. She went to work for the National Forest Service in Colorado and in Washington State. And what she did with a crew out in the wilderness, clearing brush, cutting trees, trails, and also she had to spend days, weeks, sometimes months camping in a tent. She got cuts, blisters, exhaustion, and you know, there's a little machismo to that work. I don't know if it's a male-dominated industry, but there is a machismo ethic to that kind of work. You better keep up, you better carry your own weight, you better pull your, you know, you better keep up. We're not gonna coddle you. And she was as green as they come. And at the end of each day, darkness would fall. She had to face something else. She was afraid of the dark. And she's spending weeks and months out there. Each night, she had to face that fear of the darkness and fear of the wild in the solitude of her tent. At first, she had trouble sleeping. And I get that. I've done my share of camping and backpacking, and after a wonderful day, night falls, and you know what? I lie awake at night in my tent, and there's sounds going on that Bruce alluded to. What are those things? And I would just be waiting for daybreak. But after a while, Claire's time in the wild turned from days to weeks to months. Her relationship with the wild began to turn too. It wasn't anything she consciously did. It's something that just happened. She said, the things that used to scare me, or at least feed my unease, the darkness pressing in on me on a moonless night, unexplained rustlings outside my tent, the unshakable sense of something formless but sentient surrounding me, became almost reassuring in their constancy, their mystery, less sinister. Moments by myself at night in the wilderness felt like a secret ritual, a prayer, something invaluable that belonged just to me. They were my refuge from an outside world that had no time for such reflection. A world lacking in mystery, but abundant in menace. More and more, the consciousness of the forest seemed to be not watching, but watching over me. Claire Thompson. On those moonless nights, she had no doubt been forced to reflect upon her innate fear of the dark and the wild, that darkness pressing in on her. And she experienced a transformation. The darkness of the forest became a conscious, sentient, loving, embracing presence to her. Imagine that. But let's be clear. The forest didn't change. She did. She was the one that changed. Again, I'm not trying to advocate panpsychism here, but the pragmatic question is, if the idea that nature and everything that is comprised in nature has some type of consciousness, some type of mind, would it cause you to live your life differently? Would you live more gently? Would you have a greater appreciation and gratitude for all that is. From your very being to what's outside your walls to the entire universe. Would you realize and respect the wonder of all that is, the preciousness of it all, and how you might care for a thing such as this? Can we save the earth with initiatives and 10-point plans? I don't think you can solve anything or save anything without having a relationship. The relationship has to come first. That's why we do our family promise work. That's why we serve our IRC Thanksgiving dinner to refugees. It's about relationship. The relationships with our Family Promise guests and the IRC refugee dinners, they change us. They reorient us more than we could ever change them with the help we're giving them. Randy is going to Meadville Lombard Seminary, and the first thing they ask you to do in seminary is to go back into your community, work at a nonprofit, and have a relationship with somebody you might not normally have a relationship with. Now, I worked at Family Promise for a year. And Randy is working for Freedom University, a university for undocumented students who are struggling, yet who are working really hard. And I am sure that when he's done his year of work there, he will have been changed and reoriented by those relationships more than they will have been changed by what he did. I guarantee that. We can't save the earth until we have a relationship with the wild, until we listen to what nature is trying to tell us. We need to first be reoriented from the inside out, because initiatives and 10-point plans aren't in here. They're not in here. So we need to be reoriented so that it's in here. And then everything that we do, everything that we say, who we are, is harmonious with all that is, with the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. We need to start with relationship, and the best way to start relationships is by listening. And may we listen deeply, and may we listen well.